I know this is hard sci-fi and sort of like presenting a, like, hey, these are things that could happen in a very serious way if we do actually do a manned Mars mission. But there's got to be a better way to get Matt Damon off the planet. I'm just saying.
I got stuck on Mars and all I got was a stupid t-shirt.
You mean like with like promises of pie?
Yeah, something. He's going to keep calm and try not to die on Mars.
Oh, really? So after nearly 2.5 hours of him being charismatic as all fuck, you're like, we need to get this guy up.
No, I'm still harkening back to South Park, I suppose. I do, in fact, like Mark Wahlberg quite a bit, and I think that they put together a great script for him here with the, just that...
For Wahlberg?
You know,
I was waiting to see.
Not Desmond Wahlberg, I'm sorry.
Well, then you really hate him.
Mark Wahlberg we could ship off. Sorry, Matt Damon.
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg went up there and just like, yeah, we're on our way to get you, man. Just chill out.
Well, no, I see what
you mean. I don't know what to do. I'm going to have to survive on Mars.
Bro, look at that. Everything's transforming into dust. That's just dust. I know, it's crazy, right?
But Drew Goddard, who came in to write the screenplay here, adapting from the hugely successful book by Andy Weir that came out in 2011, really is kind of the star of this picture for me, because the book is a great book that is very, very, very hard sci-fi, very procedural problem-solving. Goddard managed to get enough of the gist of the situations that were going on and just enough of the science to keep it hard sci-fi while punching it up in just the right way for the actor, Matt Damon.
Hey, science dork. The studio has notes. Make it funny.
Yeah. Well, you got to. It's a 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah.
Well, you read the book and you go, this is good, but how in the fuck are you going
to
make a movie
out of this? And I've heard that. Like, usually you hear that the book is way better. It's not even close to the same experience as the movie delivers. But yeah, this seems to be one of the times where it gives you a welcome alternative
not even just a, you know, a accompaniment to the book, like an illustration. Like, some good movies are like, well, you should read the book and then the movie's fun because it's sort of like, oh, that's a fun way of seeing the
highlights
stuff that happened.
Right.
And this actually finds just enough of a different take to have its own set of strengths.
Well, I feel like they really cast the right person here, because Matt Damon is really good at being serious and funny at this, like he can do that transition really well.
Yeah,
he can be extremely dramatic one moment and then really funny the next moment, and that's hard to do, and then pull off believably.
Oh, by the way, we're the Unusual Suspects. I'm Chris,
JC,
Elliot,
Bo,
and I'm the King of Mars,
John Carter.
Sure, yeah, that would be the King of Mars. Actually,
I'm going to rename Chris's kitties John Carter and then Phobos and Deimos. So.
Yeah, that's not going to take.
No, the fans will write in.
Okay, fair enough. But you're right, Elliot. I agree.
Oh, wow.
You don't get to hear that often.
That's weird.
Everybody go home.
Wait, hold on. I disagree with everything Elliot said. Now you can feel comfortable. Ah, that's good.
Yeah, that really did tense him up. He was all like, what's happening right now? Are you guys, is this a lead in to really tear into me?
Yeah, it's like everybody just secretly hated this one.
Fuck you with Matt Damon's brow ridge. No, boom.
Note to rest of crew. Next opportunity to do that, do it. We actually used to pull that on Corey on occasion back in the day.
I tell you learn something about yourself as a critic when you get that first one where everybody just disagrees with you, because after the visit, I went, I'm going to go look at Rotten Tomatoes. Maybe I'm right. And I'm like, oh, Elliot, that's horrible. Let's just take a loss. Just take a loss there.
You know, a lot of people agreed with you. But either way, I have a feeling that The Martian is going to be one of those ones that is going to unify more people than not in positive response to it. Certainly strong performances here from Matt Damon, who plays astronaut Mark Watney, who, after believed to be dead, left for dead on a early escape from Mars when a stronger than usual dust storm kicks off. He is forced to science the shit out of it and
great
survive
line
for hundreds and hundreds of days on, or souls, as it were, on Mars, using just his wits and what was left behind to do it. Well, meanwhile, the rest of his crew, Jessica Chastain, Michael Pena, Kate Mara, Sebastian Stan, and Axel Henny are...
They're on their way home. They rendezvoused with the orbiting spacecraft that's going to take them back to Earth, and you know it will take them several months to get home. In fact, like, I believe almost a year to get home.
Yeah, and then you have back on Earth, you have Jeff Daniels as the head of NASA, sort of the two guys right under him, Chiwetel Ejiofor and Sean Bean, who miraculously does not get killed out of nowhere.
Yeah, so. Spoiler alert.
Well, he's not really in any danger. He's on Earth in Houston.
We're talking about probability.
Somebody's going to get killed in Houston. I was going to say,
he could have a heart attack. He's in Houston.
Fair enough. Well, you were part of you was expecting it, though.
Yeah.
Just because it was Sean Bean. You're like, oh, here we go. And you got, like, Kristen Wiig down there. Just, this is a solid
Don Glover.
Donald Glover has
I was thinking Don Glover the first time he was on screen, too.
Who basically is playing Abed.
This is a strong cast that has, like I said, like, most of the people in here have played comedy before, and they make great use of that, but never in a sort of, like,
yeah, like
totally...
Kristen Wiig isn't doing bits here. No. And it's a dumb
hell, she's
and...
more serious than anybody else.
I think so. Yeah, well, she is the PR director for NASA, and at this point, she's having kind of a hard day.
she gets to do some fun double takes.
Yeah, because, you know, Jeff Daniels is the... He's the head of NASA, and he does a really great job here of playing a guy who, because he does have to make these really, really hard decisions, you're like... At first, you're very much like, wow, this guy's kind of a son of a bitch. And then you, throughout the movie, you're like, oh, okay, well, this guy actually is just, he's got a lot of fucking pressure on his shoulders. You know, and one of the things that he's most concerned about, he's like, well, we got five astronauts that came home after this dust storm that theoretically could have killed all of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just like we're taking the win, and he, you know, he's definitely moved by the fact that this guy died. And then all of a sudden the satellite picks up the fact that the habitat where Matt Damon is essentially living at this point, and where the rest of the team was living until they evacuated, there's movement going around. He's moving the rover. He's like polishing up the solar panels.
And surprisingly, it's not Ben Affleck on a couch.
Yeah. And so they're like, oh my God, we thought he was dead and not so much. So now becomes it's a rescue mission, but because this is a hard sci-fi movie, it's not just, well, just fire up the jets. Well, since you have to wait for a launch window, and they're like, yeah, we're fucked. By the time we get anything out, he only had like, you know, a couple months worth of food left.
Yeah,
it will take us, like, at least, you know, 2 years to get back.
Yeah, and it turns out to figure all that shit out, a lot of math.
Yeah. A lot of math. It's made even more clear in the book where my head just started spinning at points. I was like, okay, just scan read through this.
If you want, like, a visual representation of, like, just how large that launch window is, like, the space between Earth and Mars, there's this video online of these people who went out to a dry lake bed and plotted out the solar system. And it's like to scale.
It's
miles apart.
To scale with the Earth being the size of a large marble,
you need
about 7 miles worth of space.
Right, yeah. Right.
And that's with the sun being like, you know, slightly bigger than an exercise ball.
And we really don't know what we're doing in space yet. So it's like, hey, go save this guy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're still kind of, we can compute this stuff out. But
although this is set, you know, obviously in the future because we haven't had a manned mission to Mars yet, it could be now.
If we had started earlier,
there's nothing about this that feels like, you know, science fiction. It feels like, wow, this could have been a real story.
Oh, yeah. And it will be. I mean, NASA, like, literally announced today. They're like, oh, yeah, we're totally go for a man.
We're sending Matt Damon to Mars.
Yeah. How does that make you guys feel? The big proponent for that was George Bush.
Well, George Bush wasn't all bad.
Yeah. No, yeah, I mean,
like, he's not my favorite president.
George Bush did a lot of great things for like AIDS research.
AIDS in Africa,
But I also don't think I would put George Bush as the horrible number one guy in the fight to put a manned mission in Mars.
Definitely fought for it.
No need to. Let's not get into politics.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
That's actually one of the great things about this. And you know, I think anybody who sees this, especially if you're an American, will leave inspired by the fact that, wow, you know, the things of pride that I have in this country is the fact that you know, we went to the moon and we put a plaque there that said we did this for everybody, not just us. And that's very much what this is about. It you know, the plight of this guy starts to, you know, like
bring affect, the world together.
Yeah, affect international relations even.
And, I was just going to say that his personal safety was the coke that the world was being bought.
Always watch Mad Men.
There's a lot of notable things just about where statistically this movie lies. It's the first Ridley Scott movie worth watching in what 20 years or something like that. It's the first good Mars film since the original Total Recall.
I like Mission to Mars, but I can understand what you're saying.
One of maybe two or three really good hard sci-fi movies.
Well, this is what we were promised in Interstellar.
I was going to say, like, in the way the movie is a welcome alternative to what the book delivers, this movie also is a welcome alternative to like what maybe you were expecting out of Interstellar.
Yeah,
like they didn't fall into love. We'll get him home.
Well, that's the thing is like this never falls back on. Just like, well, our audience doesn't understand or care what's going on, so let's just make it all squishy.
But it's still exciting. Like, they don't let the math drown out the drama.
And there's not, you know, like, one of the slight problems I had with Gravity is I felt like her backstory felt very tacked on and forced.
Well, she wasn't charismatic.
In this, they barely address, like, the astronauts, you know, lives on planet Earth. I mean, they you know, they show them talking to some loved ones when they're in Earth orbit and a couple of things like that. But, you know, you don't know, it comes out that there are certain relationships there. But, you know, by and large, they play this as what this is about is getting this guy home.
Yeah,
that's what works about it, because every second of this movie is about his struggle to remain alive long enough for them to get back to him.
Those other details are mentioned in passing just enough to say, like, yeah, of course these people have people back home who are like, right. Well, shit, you mean you're going to be in space even longer now? Yeah. I mean, that's all you really need to get out of that. And so it continues past it. But there's no long sequences of, like, ringing of hands, you know.
Or flashback sequences or anything like that.
Exactly. Even the montage was pretty short.
There was too much disco, but Rodney agrees with that.
So. But I mean, I was going to say that it was a wise move on their part to find a very early on explanation for why it's just disco, and then, you know, it's a lot cheaper to actually rent.
Some of that might be public domain by now.
I was actually thinking about that during this, because in the book, one of the big parts is it's not just disco. Like, she was the only one who had brought media, apparently, so, like, that was left there. And so all she had was disco, and all she had for watching entertainment were 70s television shows.
I could deal with that.
Like, so he had to watch Three's Company, like, three times all the way through. At one point, there's just a note in the diary. It's like, I'm sorry, New Girl, you're no Chrissy.
You know? I can watch Good Times over and over again.
And I kept going, you know, I all we see here is Happy Days for a second. I was like, yeah, well, that's probably the only one they had rights to.
Yeah.
They're like, okay. And that makes for a funny bit later on, too.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, like, I am by no means a writer, but one of our listeners is a writer, and I'm a Facebook friend with him on Facebook. And
writer? What's that like?
Yeah, I'm saying like I'm saying as a neophyte, as somebody who doesn't do this.
I'm just giving you a hard time because you are here, Elliot.
Okay,
Burgess had to put his dick down for a minute.
Was like, he posted this like rule of writing. He's like, Act one, put your character up a tree.
Oh yeah.
Act two, throw rocks at him. Act three, get him back. And that's all I thought about through this movie. Mm. And it follows that tenet so well. And even though I knew that's what was going on, it's so well done. And unlike Gravity, they keep a character that's charismatic to watch. So I care about that character without too much of a backstory.
Sure.
That was my big problem with Gravity is I didn't really care about her because it wasn't fun to watch her.
And I even liked like all the characters here. Like we mentioned Jeff Daniels' character, the head of NASA, having to make all the difficult decisions. But I never really felt like he was the villain in this. Like really was no villain.
No, and that's not what I'm putting forward. Just, right. But he doesn't, you know... At the beginning, he's definitely not coming off as like, soft and lovey, give me a hug. Right, oh, okay, this guy's, like I said, kind of a bit of a son.
Well, they have that interesting representation of what was the different opinions of everything coming into play involved, you know, including public perception and what people on the returning mission would think if they knew that he was still alive, or with that triangle between Jeff Daniels, Sean Bean, and Chiwetel Ejiofor, who are sort of like, nobody's the bad guy, nobody's the good guy, they're all just kind of coming at it from very different
angles. Honestly, it reminded me of Star Trek. You had the heart, the conscience, and the brain sort of just going at it, and you know which one's going to win this time,
right? Except that, like, I would say that Sean Bean was probably Kirk.
Yeah.
He was the passionate one.
Yeah, and Jeff Daniels was Spock.
Well,
yeah.
And Ezra Cole was the conscience. McCoy, actually.
Well, you're right. You're right.
But Daniels, he was plowing green ladies, so.
Well, I mean, Vegas.
Yeah, no, and Bones is the guy that comes in and says, "Are you out of your fucking mind? Of course we've got to save them." And that is exactly what Sean Bean is.
Just, it was a pleasure to watch this movie, honestly. It was just something. It's something that I can see my mom, who doesn't see many movies, she maybe sees three movies a year, really enjoying really well. And that's sort of my metric for like wide audience appeal.
All right, guys, are you ready to tell them? We all hated it, Elliot. Just kidding.
Did Shyamalan have something to do with this movie? Is that the fucking twist? He made a good movie.
Yeah, I was. That was the one thing that was worrying me about this was actually Ridley Scott. Because like he's just been fucking up promising thing after promising thing for the last decade and a half or so. And I was like, please don't fuck this up. And going, well, the source material is so good. There's so many good actors. Drew Goddard is a scriptwriter I really enjoyed.
He helped on Cabin in the Woods, right?
He co-wrote it with Joss Whedon. Right. Yeah.
Yes, this is the movie that's the opposite of Prometheus because it's full of people doing really, really smart things.
Yeah,
exactly. As opposed to shit no scientist would ever fucking do.
Like a cartographer that forgets how to make a map.
And I will say, I kept thinking about their points in here that I'm like, if I hadn't read the book, I would be saying to myself, but wait, what about this? You know what? That stuff is... it's just they had to cut some stuff.
Yeah.
Like they have to go.
Sure.
They had to cut the part where he goes, okay, now I need to figure out how exactly I have enough water for all this time. I need to figure out how to bring this giant oxygenator onto the rover. Yeah, okay. We just assumed that, figured it out.
And this is already, if the movie has a flaw, I will say it runs a little long.
A little bit,
you know, right? Because they've got some, you know, they've got some shit to do. They have these big set pieces that they need to execute for it to make narrative sense. But yeah, there were sometimes, you know, and you know, definitely the end cap is well worth it. But there were sometimes between point M and point L
on the ASCII chart.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, can we speed this up a little? Okay, I'm fine.
Yeah, I mean it throws a lot at you, but I don't think anything was too far extra. Like at 141 minutes, like maybe 4 or 5 minutes. A little tighter, but no, I think the pacing here was really good. I don't think that was too much fluff.
Yeah, overall it worked for me pretty well too. Yeah. I was surprised when I came out when I saw that it was as long as it was. Yeah. I was like, oh wow.
To bring it back to
flew by for me.
Yeah, and to bring it back to the Drew Goddard thing, like I didn't know he had wrote it. When I saw his name on the screen, I was like, oh, well, that's why this movie's so funny.
Yeah.
Because he wrote it.
Well, there was a part of the movie that I felt very vindicated in, because like, as my favorite movie's Armageddon, I'm going to get past that, but like there's a scene in Armageddon that that Master Pancake makes fun of every time they roast it, where they talk about the rockets going past the moon and they hold it up. This movie copied that just frame by frame, that explanation of how you slingshot around things.
Elliot.
That's because that's how you do it.
No, but what I'm saying is that everybody before this was like, that doesn't make any sense. How are you going to explain it that way as well? The smart movie did it too. That's all I'm saying.
And Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home.
Yep.
Thank you very much. Like, without time travel. Robert Heinlein does like a slingshot maneuver in here, like, and every other fucking novel.
No, but what I'm saying is that all this shit that Armageddon got for that scene.
Elliot. You're missing the vital point that it wasn't that scene that is the reason that that's a terrible fucking movie.
And also, technically, Talladega Nights also explains the slingshot thing a little bit too.
It does?
Well, really?
And the physics of like using something to like, propel.
Are you talking about shake and bake?
Yes.
No, well, I mean, well, that was stolen from Days of Thunder, because talking about drag coefficients.
Well,
this
go.
Is completely different. But what we're actually forgetting is that this is basically Apollo 11.
Yeah.
Like, that's all it is. It's just a whole different planet.
Well, I don't know if I agree.
No,
with
it's
that.
Same thing. Slingshots. You got the guys are actually doing the burp, burp, burp. Okay, this is what he's got.
By that argument, you could reduce it down and go, oh, it's a Jack London story.
Okay, then let's do that too.
But
except Apollo 11 happened.
I mean, eventually you're going to cut stuff off till you go, oh wait, there's only six plots, you know, and you're like, okay, come on. This doesn't even have the feel of Apollo 11 to me, because that focused so much on the families and what was going on with the emotional centers of it that did work, but that had a really different tone.
Same devices as far as moving the story along are exactly
the same. I see what you're saying, because it's like this felt like an evolution of the Castaway movie. In that, you know, this guy is stranded. He can't get away. And I felt like it was a better Castaway movie than Castaway.
Well, that much is certain.
Yeah, so. I didn't explain that one well. Like, Chris just looked at me like, the fuck you say? And I was like, oh.
Ultimately, the point of what I'm trying to make is I don't think it's fair to this movie to say, oh, yeah, it's just kind of
Well, no, but I don't think it's fair to
elements of a bunch of different things.
Yeah, but it's also not fair to attack what I said as I'm debasing this somehow.
Well, no, I'm just saying you said it's basically just a remake of Apollo 11. I was like, no, it's not.
Well, as far as the actual mechanics, yeah, it is.
Yeah, it has some of the mechanics of it, but it also has, as you said, mechanics of something like Castaway or Robinson Crusoe, if you will. It has a lot of that type of stuff going on that certainly was not present in Apollo 11. That's the only point I'm trying to make, is that I don't agree that it's that closely tied, but I do agree that like some of the mechanics are certainly similar to that.
Okay, Chris.
It's the mark of a great movie that we all come to with different things.
Somehow I upset Joe by saying I don't totally agree with
you. Well, I don't think I was saying that it's a direct ripoff. I'm just saying that particular part is just inspired by history.
This movie is a total ripoff of that New Yorker cartoon with that guy stranded on a little tiny island with one palm tree.
That is true, though.
And that palm tree is a potato tree.
I don't want to eat potatoes.
I forgot. I can't believe they didn't. That was one funny part from the book I couldn't believe they didn't put in here, where there's this log entry is just like, I fucking hate potatoes. Fuck potatoes.
Well, I think they're potatoes now.
Yeah.
Well, the part where he's like, I ran out of ketchup 5 days ago.
We just said that look, that stare into the camera, like, here is a man who is about at the edge of giving up hope. Because there's no more condiments.
And that's what this movie really is about, the power of condiments.
The power of condiments. That's what I took away from it.
Well, that's what Australia...
If that guy had had some mustard, he could have flown to Jupiter.
I'm restocking tonight.
That's why Australians are mean, because condiments cost so damn much.
Vegemite in Australia?
Yeah, because they got to ship the ketchup.
Except for Vegemite, which is fucking terrible.
Right, that's just evil.
Yeah, I don't know who thinks that's good, but you're wrong. Anyway, let's go to final thoughts. Elliot, why don't you start us off?
I really love this movie. I think it's going to really hit well with a good cross-section of the nation. I think this is a movie that people who don't go see movies are going to want to go see, and they're not going to be disappointed. You have great acting, charismatic lead, great writing, and great bit players. Like, Donald Glover was only in the movie for maybe 15 minutes out of the entire runtime, and for me, he's the second best performance in the movie. One of the things I love about this movie, and it's my final thought, you walk away from this movie feeling inspired. And that's something rare for me. Like, you know, you come across a problem, you got to just figure it out, and then the next problem, then the next problem. So for all of that, I give this movie an enthusiastic 10 Landers out of 10.
Bo?
It's been a while since I've been gushy over anything, but this movie is really what you want a movie to be. It's thrilling, it's engrossing, and it's even a little bit inspiring. You know, there's... You know, not a lot of negative takeaway with this. Like I said, it was a little bit long for me. I think they could have shaved off 11, 15 minutes. But, you know, even with the current running time, I was totally there from start to finish. I had a lot of fun. I was very moved at times and found it very funny at times. Hey, what more do you want? I give it a solid 9.5 shit potatoes out of 10.
Yeah. JC?
I didn't expect the level of humor that this had, and that was a really welcome surprise. A lot of times these movies kind of tend to be overdramatic and a little dreary, and I mean, even though sometimes they may have a happy ending, they may not. It's you never quite know where you're going to get going into it. You just know you're always going to feel constant, you know, dread possibly, or fear, or sympathy. Just, you don't expect humor. And so I liked the humor in it. Anytime an ensemble cast doesn't really have a weak performance in it at all, like that's, that gets 2 thumbs up from me. I would give this 8 out of 10. I'm going to steal Joe's joke and say 8 out of 10 potatoes.
First, I really got to give them their credit. I've got a few friends that work at the JPL as rocket scientists, and that is exactly what they look like. That is exactly how they work. They're a little bit off because the rest of that processing power is making fucking rockets.
So, I wonder how often working there somebody goes, come on, this isn't rocket science. Oh, wait, no, it
is. It's like, yes, it fucking is. Cut me some slack.
I was afraid that they'd get a little cloying with like him being stuck all by himself and just getting all super sappy and a little bit crazy. And he did to a certain extent with the crazy, but I think they handled the whole, like, if I crack now, then I'm just as good as dead, you know, so might as well keep on top of that.
It wasn't being stranded that made him crazy. It was that he chose to listen to the disco.
But he didn't have ABBA. So I think that was that's saving the only grace. Thing
that yeah, yeah, that was what kept him sane.
Dancing
yeah.
Queen would have put him over the edge.
It's true.
Yeah. I loved the set pieces. It looked kind of like where I grew up, except way redder.
Wait, did you grow up in El Paso?
No,
Midland.
Okay. The only thing that I really absolutely hated, and the reason why it's not going to get a perfect score, is that Matt Damon is for shit when it comes to chew acting. And there was way too much chew acting in this.
Chew acting?
What's chew acting? Yeah, he's putting something in his mouth and he's going to keep talking. No, gross. You can't do it, buddy. Like, two scenes. You get two scenes and then that's it. That's new rule. So, I'm going to...
Listen up, Hollywood.
I was like, would you say that Brad Pitt's the best at that?
Brad Pitt's fantastic yeah. at it.
This is a whole gauge for acting that has never occurred to me before. I'm fascinated.
But it's important.
If you're going to be eating during a scene, I can understand what he's yeah. saying.
So, I'm going to give it 9 gaping puncture wounds out of 10.
That's a weird point.
I really thoroughly enjoyed this. I think one of the things I enjoyed the most is that, oh my god, Hollywood made a hard sci-fi film. They made it the way it should be made. And it means we're probably going to see more hard sci-fi films. I mean, maybe we'll finally get Rendezvous with Rama or Ringworld or something like that.
Those sound hard.
Just these things they've talked about forever, never happened. God, like, who was it? Oh, god damn it, how come I can't remember his name? The other guy from Seven, other than Brad Pitt.
Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman, thank you.
Kevin Spacey.
Has been trying to get Rendezvous with Rama off the ground for 20 years and has not been able to get the money for it.
No, maybe if he could just direct a decent play at the old Vic.
And if nothing, more work for Drew Goddard.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. Drew Goddard's script, it's so tight. It's funny right where it needs to be. It cuts out as much of the hard science and leaves just enough for you to know what's going on but not get bored or confused with it. For a 141-minute film, this is a really tight, moving, like, vehicle. It really is. It doesn't feel like there's much fat to trim here at all. It doesn't hurt that you've got so many great actors in here who all have just the right amount of screen time. Matt Damon makes for an engaging lead that you really want to see him be saved, except for apparently when he's eating.
Yeah, he can leave his fucking mouth on Mars.
One of the things I also say I really enjoyed about this as a reader of the book ends with a very punctuated, okay, the story's over, end of book. This has a really nice epilogue sequence.
That was
to
satisfying.
It, that was like, oh, that's really cool, because I was like looking at the book. Are there more pages? And shaking the book. Where's the part after?
I solved all the problems. We're done.
Yeah, that's pretty much it with the book.
And it's like the writer was like, I'm fucking done writing this book now.
And I was really pleased to see an epilogue that actually really did work.
It made sense.
Really enjoyed this. This is one of the very best films I've seen this year, and I'm going to give it 10 out of 10 food particles in Matt Damon's mouth that we can see clearly.
Sweet. Wow, commencing countdown, engines on.
All right. Remember, science is hard.